Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Today you're with me, Becky Friedman, and Dan Lombardo. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great, Becky.
And we are here in the studio with Jonathan Tweet for quite the treat. How are you, Jonathan?
Really good. Thanks, Becky.
Jonathan Tweet is a game designer, a children's author, and a secular community builder. He's based in the Seattle area. And we talked with Jonathan back in 2015 about his book, Grandmother Fish. He's back with us today for an update and to tell us about some new projects. Welcome back to the studio, Jonathan.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So can you recap for us what Grandmother Fish is about? It was a really awesome and successful project. Sort of how'd you get your ideas? What's it about? Where's it gone?
Sure, thanks. So Grandmother Fish is actually a project I've been working on for over 15 years. When my daughter was little, I wanted to get her a book that would teach evolution to her in a way that was really accessible to a very young child. And there was no such thing. So I started working on it myself. And I sort of, you know, worked away on it for years and years. And then finally, 3 years ago, I figured out how to make the book really work right. And once I had that, I found an artist and went on Kickstarter. We raised money for it. We raised over $36,000. I got endorsements from Dan Dennett and Steven Pinker. It was really exciting. And then we self-published the book. The artist I found turned out to be really, really good. And she was able to help me not just with the art, but with the story, because she's very familiar with kids' books. And so what we had is this story starts with Grandmother Fish, and it goes through five grandmothers, reptile and mammal and ape and finally human. And each one of them can do things like Grandmother Fish can wiggle and Grandmother Reptile can breathe air in and out. And so the kids actually mimic these sounds and motions. And so kids love it because they get to act like animals and hoot like apes. And then at the end, the story concludes with it's really about them all along. And the reason that they can hoot and grab and do all these things that our ancestors did is that we're descended from those animals. And we self-published this book once she got all the art done, put it all together and, you know, printed it ourselves and sent it to all the Kickstarter backers and sold it on Amazon. And then we got last October, we got a review on an NPR blog, and that review sort of went viral, and the book sold out, and an agent got in touch with us, and we signed with the agent, and then the agent got us talking to publishers in New York, and there were multiple publishers who were interested in it, and we got a big deal with Macmillan, and so now Macmillan has released a second edition.
And I should say, Macmillan is a publisher of a lot of educational materials for, you know, pre-K through 12, right?
Yeah, so this is particularly Fywell and Friends, which is you know, one of the there are many imprints under Macmillan, and Fywell and Friends is it's sort of the personal imprint of Jean Fywell, and she picks books that she thinks are really special to be in her line, and so we're really honored that she wanted Grandmother Fish. And yeah, Macmillan has great reach, so now the book is going to come out in the UK and in Australia. There's a translation deal for Italian. You know, it's on iPad and Android and Kindle. They're able to get the book so many places that we couldn't get it. They're getting it into libraries and schools and what have you. So, you know, I started working on it over 15 years ago, did the Kickstarter 2 years ago, self-published a year ago. Now the new edition is out with Macmillan. They're doing all the marketing work and what have you. It's really great. So that's Grandmother Fish. Now we're just waiting to see how well it does. And the early reviews are really good. School Library Journal, they called it groundbreaking and said it was highly recommended for schools, libraries, and home. So really, really a rave review. And hopefully we'll just see more like that. And I think the book is really going to find a home.
Definitely. Let's hope so.
That's fantastic. So it started out as just a Kickstarter project, a very small, you know, independent thing going on.
That's right.
So you got the attention of the publishers. Do you know what it was about the book that really sort of grabbed their attention? And I'm curious if they required any changes made for a second edition.
That's a good question. They did not require any changes. They changed some of the graphics, and they put a nice dust jacket on it and what have you, and printed it on glossier paper and with better binding. And, you know, so it's in some ways just the physical quality is a little higher, but it's they didn't ask us to change a word. That was very, very gratifying, right? Because,
very, yeah.
Yeah, here we are self-publishing and trying to do our best. And when, you know, a New York publisher says it's good as is, that's really exciting. You know, obviously one reason that they were interested in the book is because it had sold out. You know, obviously there had been this sort of a big buzz about it and what have you. But what they recognize in the book is that it takes a really big idea and makes it accessible to children, and not just accessible to them, but appealing to them. Like, it's one thing to explain to a child evolution or, you know, our natural history, but if you can get them to really be excited about it and want to think about that and want to think about where are we evolving next and what other kinds of animals are we related to, It's the way that it draws the child in with the motions and the sounds, I think, that really nails it.
I think what I remember as being very special also is not just accessible to the preschoolers, but there's a whole sort of supplement in the back that enables librarians and big sisters and brothers and parents and babysitters and teachers to really feel comfortable approaching that big idea that you just said, which is evolution.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I'm a big science geek, and so I was excited to have a couple pages in the back where I was self-publishing so I could write whatever I wanted and, you know, wrote about the science of natural selection and the kinds of things that people usually get wrong. And I tried to find simple words so that the parent could sort of use those words as a guideline for explaining things to children. You know, the book looks simple with, you know, grandmother reptile can squeak and cuddle with her children or what have you. But actually, a lot of thought went into picking which animals are going to be represented as grandmothers and what are the things that they can do that sort of represent where they are in sort of our evolutionary history. And so in the back, I'm able to go back and explain to everybody all the science that is sort of invisible behind the story. So, yeah, and that's also a section that lets everyone feel confident that there's real science here and this is not just, you know, a kid's story. Because sometimes when people try to explain science to kids, especially something tricky like evolution, they dumb it down to the point at which it's not really accurate anymore. And I'm too much of a science geek to do that.
So quite the feat there. Now, you're on the show today because you have another Kickstarter coming up.
That's right.
And that's for your evolution-based card game that you're calling Clades.
That's right.
Dan, maybe you can give us a little bit of background on what a clade is and how scientists use it to group animals.
Sure, yeah. Clades are something that we use in phylogeny, where we're trying to determine the ancestry of any particular species. We used to use just sort of purely physical traits to try to compare and contrast creatures, but it wasn't as useful as we'd hoped. So with the use of not just physical traits, observable traits, but also genetics, scientists are more able to group things by their ancestry. So when we talk about a clade, what we're talking about is a single population and all of its descendants. So we could say that great apes are apes in general would be a clade that includes the orangutans, the gorillas, chimpanzees, bonobos, but also humans. And then moving down to the next clade, we could go with the genus Homo, Homo sapiens, Homo neanderthalensis. We would be a clade there because we share a common ancestor with them. From there, we could look at all humans as a single clade. Then a single family of humans would be a clade.
So this is something that's both big, but also can be very small. It's
right.
Sort of an extensible category.
Yeah, it could go from all eukaryotic cells, that is to say, all living organisms whose cells contain a nucleus would be a single clade. And all the way down to one human being and their two offspring, that would be a clade as well.
So, Jonathan, how do you then make that into a card game?
It is really tricky because, like Dan says, these clades are nested one inside each other with an incredible amount of detail, right? So it really is not We can't get into all the detail, but what we are trying to present in the game is a simple idea that you can group animals by their common descent. Like Dan said, there's a population and all of its descendants, that's a clade. So if you look at, for example, all the mammals, we are the creatures that are all descended from the earliest population of mammals, right? So in this game, you match animal cards. Every card has animals on it, one, two, or three animals. Those animals are all closely related, and then you match cards according to the clades that the cards belong to. So there are three major clades in the game. There's mammals, and there's arthropods, so that's like spiders and insects, winged insects in particular in this game. And then sauropsids, that's the birds and reptiles together. The term reptile does not define a clade, because birds are descended from the first reptiles, but they're not counted as reptiles, so the reptile is sort of this weird term that doesn't have a clear meaning in science anymore.
So when we learned that there's like, you know, five or six kinds of animals, the mammals, the birds, the reptiles, amphibians, and the fish, that was completely wrong.
Oh my goodness.
That's a pretty good start. Like, honestly, most of those groups have been distinct from each other in evolutionary terms for tens or hundreds of millions of years. But those groups all nest within each other in a really complicated way that is not at all apparent. So, for example, correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, but in terms of clades, humans are a kind of fish. We're a kind of fish, right, whose ancestors adapted for life on land,
we share a clade with common ancestor of the lobe-finned fishes.
Exactly. Yeah. And with all fishes, for that matter, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah. Because every clade goes back. Every clade sort of has a bigger clade including it, and also has littler clades inside it, basically. Mm-hmm. So just getting across this idea that kids should think of animals in terms of what groups they're descended from, that's a really key feature. And the idea that reptiles and birds are closely related, that's another important feature.
Undoing that sort of conception that an iguana is very, very, very distinct from an ostrich, is very distinct from, you know, a water, mostly water-dwelling snake?
Exactly. So, like, for example, you know, a lot of times, when I was growing up, you would have books talk about two kinds of animals, cold-blooded and warm-blooded animals, right? Well, that's not a smart way to divide them up, because birds are warm-blooded and mammals are warm-blooded, but birds and mammals have not shared a common ancestor for like 300 million years, right? Birds are much more closely related to reptiles, and especially to alligators, crocodiles. So that distinction isn't... that's not a good distinction.
Now, this is something that I kind of wanted to bring up when we're talking about clades and using physical traits to sort of help identify them. Like you said, with reptiles is not a useful term, because it's a polyphyletic group, since it doesn't include birds.
I let you pronounce that word.
Right. So a clade would be a monophyletic group. All of the organisms that are the descendants of one population of ancestors. A polyphyletic group would be some of the descendants of that ancestor. So if we grouped together, say, lizards, crocodiles, and turtles, and said, well, these are reptiles,
right,
but then we left out birds, then we have a polyphyletic group. But another interesting term there is a paraphyletic group, animals that share a characteristic but not a recent common ancestor. Like, so we could say animals that fly.
Right.
And we could group birds, flying insects, and bats together and say this is a shared trait, but without that shared recent common ancestor that also had that same trait, they're a paraphyletic group. Now, are there any foils in the game to sort of get that idea across, that it's tempting to want to classify this way but not actually accurate?
That's a really interesting question, and I'm pretty excited actually about some of the details of how we handled this. So the first cut on it is, within every major clade, I've picked three clades, a mammal clade, you know, like three mammal clades, three arthropod clades, and three sauropsid clades, to represent the clade. And within each of those major clades, the three subclades are related to air, land, and water, right? And so you'll have bats mm-hmm. as the air mammals, and you'll have birds as the air sauropsids, and winged insects are the air arthropods. And so when you are matching these animals, sometimes you will match three winged things together as part of a match. But you make a distinction between matching by their environment and matching by their clade. So kids can understand, okay, well, these are alike in that they are flying animals, animals with wings, but they don't count as a clade. And in fact, when you do make a match where all the animals are in the same clade, you get a bonuses. So you know that birds plus winged insects plus bats is a match in the game, but it's not... it's not a clade match.
So that's not the most valuable match that you can get?
Right, okay.
So they're always making that distinction between I'm categorizing these things together and these things actually belong together in an evolutionary sense.
So this is kind of similar to how a game like Uno can teach colors and numbers.
Yep. That's right.
So here we have environment and clade.
Yeah.
As separate ideas that can advance you in the game.
Exactly. And now here's the extra trick is if you look at the water arthropods, right, there is a crab and a lobster, and then the third one is a woodlouse. Well, woodlice actually live on land. They sort of still breathe water because they get water on their gills, and that's sort of how they get their oxygen. But I think it's important for kids to understand that lobster and that crab and that woodlouse all share a common ancestor that lived in the water. All the descendants don't necessarily live in the water anymore, but they still share a water ancestor. And so for the birds, you'll see the same thing. There's a robin and an eagle and an ostrich. Well, the ostrich doesn't fly, but it is descended from a flying animal, and so it counts as part of the air clade. And that's another sort of subtle message that the game gets across, is that sometimes things that fly aren't that related to each other, and sometimes something that flies and something that doesn't are actually more closely related than two things that fly, for example.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait a minute, not sacrificing children, that's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com. Bring it back, but it's more than basic.
We are here in the studio with Jonathan Tweet.
I'm looking at a couple of cards outside of the three main groups here, where you have the sauropsids, right, the arthropods, and groups of mammals. I see a fish here, which is the vertebrate that I would associate with being related to the sauropsids and the mammals. But now we've got a real outlier here, and this appears to be a nautilus shell, which is a mollusk.
Exactly. So The mollusk is closely related to the arthropods, right? Like long ago, right, animals split sort of into two groups, and one group got us the vertebrates, and the other group got us the worms and the bugs and the octopi and octopuses and what have you. So I felt bad leaving out like this vast branch of the evolutionary tree, the mollusks with the squids and the octopuses and whatever, right? And mm-hmm. So I wanted to have some role for them in the game. Obviously, there are no flying mollusks, so yet.
Debatable, but we can move on from there.
All right. So anyway, I put in some bonus cards, one for a mollusk and the other is for not just fish, but ray-finned fish.
Oh, I see.
Because
okay.
Obviously, the reptiles and the humans are the lobe-finned fish mm-hmm. in this. Mm-hmm. And so the big clade that we are leaving out when we're looking at land vertebrates is our close relatives, the other vertebrates, and that's the ray-finned fish that
right,
have radiated and dominated the oceans for, I don't know, hundreds of millions of years.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question about games in general. Now,
yeah.
You have a long history with working on games like Dungeons & Dragons
That's right.
and Magic the Gathering
That's
and
right.
things like that. And how did you go about reconciling the planless nature of the evolutionary process with the fact that most engrossing gameplay involves players strategizing to meet some sort of goal? And clearly evolution doesn't have a destination or a goal, right? That's one of the important things that we're trying to get across to folks to understand it.
That's a really important point, is that evolution happens in all directions at once without a plan or even really a goal, right? And I have thought for years about how could I do an evolution game where the science is really good? Because, I could think of a popular evolution game out there where it's really the intelligent design game, because you are choosing what sort of changes to make in with your species, right? Well, that is not natural selection, and that's not how evolution worked. And so what clades does is we don't track the actual evolution of clade over time. What we do is we look at its evolutionary history, and so when you look at the three land mammal cards, and there's a squirrel and a rabbit and a human, that tells us that those three species share a common ancestor with each other that they don't share with any of the other mammals in the game. But it's the evolutionary history that you're dealing with, not sort of playing it out step by step. And so there is no point where you're making decisions on how things will evolve.
So there was a game that came out in 2014 yeah. called Evolution. And what an interesting coincidence. Last weekend, I was at a game night at a friend's house, and this game was being played. And decided to play something else because as a guy with a deep interest in biology and education, I was looking at this game going like, well, they're choosing the changes here. I don't want to deride the game at all. I think it's a great teaching tool and I could see its usefulness. But if you're a pedant like me about these sorts of things.
Exactly. If you love this stuff too much, it's
right.
Right? Yeah, so this is also...
It's like watching sci-fi and hearing sound in space. Like, no, that's not...
Exactly. This is the same game where I can send my predators to go eat your eat some of your population. Well, if it really were a game about evolution, that would mean that the remainder of your population was now less predatable by my creatures, because I would have gotten the easy ones, and now
right.
the ones that are tougher for me to predate would be breeding, and that's evolution.
Hmm.
So you're really, really committed to getting the science right. How do you then balance the complex scientific terms, the ones that Dan is pronouncing
right.
flawlessly for us, with something that's geared towards, I imagine, maybe age 6 and up?
That's right. I have spent a lot of time as a game designer doing beginner sets and versions of games for either younger kids or for beginners. And so I have a lot of experience getting across big ideas with relatively simple words. And that's what I did with Grandmother Fish, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to talk about monophyletic groups or what have you. I'm going to talk about that but I'm not going to use those terms, right? And I think I'm going to throw in some big words like sauropsid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kids love that. They love to have sort of the cool word that their parents don't know, right? And even Clade is sort of like that. Like, this is the game where, you know, snotty 10-year-olds like I used to be are going to be, right, schooling their teachers and their parents on what a Clade is because they learned it from this game. And that's all part of my plan. You know, the game plays just with visuals. There's no words on the cards or anything. So it's pretty simple. You can even look at which direction the animals are facing to remind you what clade they're in. So if you know nothing, you can still sort of follow the game along. And then, you know, just like I could not help myself and I had to put a bunch of geeky science stuff in the back of Grandmother Fish, for sure I'm going to put stuff in the rule book about what do these clades really mean and why did I pick these clades and how are they really related and what have you.
If I may, just for a minute, as someone who teaches English language learners, I can see that, you know, someone with all sorts of different communicative skills or deficits might actually benefit tremendously from being able to get the conceptual part of it just from the visuals. So that's, I must say, that's really neat. That might be another marketing angle for you.
Thank you. Right. Yeah.
Speaking of sort of marketing and the usefulness angle here, I have Grandmother Fish, and I think it's a fantastic book. It's a great way to start this idea in a young mind.
Thanks.
Was there a particular reason that you wanted to go towards games and not back into more storybooks, or are there going to be more storybooks or more games?
Really good question. So Karen and I are actually working on another book.
This is Karen Lewis, your illustrator?
Karen Lewis, my illustrator, right? She is a children's science illustrator, so she can make an animal look accurate enough that a scientist can recognize it and still be friendly. So that's she has been a really good find, and so she's doing all the art on clades, and we're working on another book for kids. And we have a couple more ideas. Obviously, you know, Grandmother Fish took me 15 years. So really the reason that I did clades next was all the work that I did with Grandmother Fish, trying to figure out, you know, follow evolution and follow these tracks and try to make sense of it. That's where I learned about clades, this really cool concept that I had never heard before. Like, I thought I was a science geek. I had studied biology in college. I didn't know what a clade was. So I became really excited about that concept, and then one day I was talking with my daughter, and the idea for this game finally came into my head. And like I said, I've been working for years and years trying to figure out how do you do a game, an evolution game, where the science is good. And when this struck and I had this idea, you know, I just knew I wanted to do it next.
Great. That's great. So one question here. We're talking about science stuff and kids and education and games, and I love talking about this stuff. It's pretty much my angle on the show. But this is Ask an Atheist. So you've worked on Dungeons and Dragons and Magic the Gathering, and these are frequent targets for religious zealots and organizations.
Right.
Do you anticipate any kickback from those groups, and have you gotten any? And if so, how do you deal with this or plan to deal with it?
Well, so, you know, Ken Ham, he's the guy at Answers in Genesis. He does not like Grandmother Fish, as you can imagine.
You didn't get a stellar review from him. I can't imagine why. No, you think it's groundbreaking?
He said we secularists are becoming really aggressive about targeting little kids, is what he said.
How does it feel, Ken Ham?
I'm on social media, right? So it's really easy for people to find me. I get people coming and, you know, leaving long posts about why evolution is wrong or saying mean things about me or what have you. And I roll with it. It's fine. If I want to argue with them, I ask whether they support my right to create my own book, just like I support their right to create their book. And that, you know, when it becomes not about whether evolution is true, but about whether constitutional rights apply to everybody, it takes the wind out of their sails a little bit.
Excellent.
So sounds like some really, really fun things. Where can our listeners follow up with your various projects and with the Clades Kickstarter? Where can we find you online?
Right. So I'm on Grandmother Fish. Grandmother Fish is on Facebook and Google Plus and Instagram and Twitter. And so people can follow us on any of those sites, and we're going to use that to keep people abreast of the Kickstarter. And then you could just go to Kickstarter yourself and search for Clades or for Jonathan Tweet, and you'll be able to you'll be able to find it.
Well, Jonathan, it's been lovely having you back in the studio again. We're excited for the Clades to be kickstarted, and we'll also put a link on our show notes here for the show.
Can I slip in one more thing about Clades?
Absolutely.
Because the new idea that Karen and I are really excited about is if we get enough funding on Clades, we will be able to use that money to do two games, not just a Clades game with modern species, but a Clades prehistoric game with dinosaurs and pterosaurs and marine reptiles. And this is where kids will learn, you know, that Ichthyosaurus was not a dinosaur and neither was Pteranodon. So I think that'll be a big hit too.
If there was ever a snotty little 10-year-old girl named Rebecca who loved spelling out all of the different dinosaur names and the prehistoric non-dinosaur names, then I think that would be right up her alley.
Yeah, well, I hope there are a lot of Rebeccas out there.
So thank you, Jonathan, for joining us. Jonathan Tweet is a game designer, a children's author based in Seattle. We're talking with him today about both Grandmother Fish coming out in its second edition, published by Macmillan, and the Clades Kickstarter. Thank you so much for joining us on Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. We hope to have some follow-ups from you in the next years about Grandmother Fish, more storybooks, and more Clades.
You bet. Thanks.
Thank you.